the University of Alabama School of Law, online. Choose between an LLM in tax or business transactions for lawyers, or a Juris Master in taxation for non-lawyers. Connect and learn with live lectures. Details at bamabydistance.ua.edu.
I'm Charlie Turner in New York, and this is Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal. New streaming TV services are popping up, and they're set to shell out big bucks for new shows. The Wall Street Journal's Eric Schwartzel will have more in a moment. First, these tech headlines. President Trump is holding what he calls a social media summit at the White House Thursday. The Wall Street Journal's Ryan Tracy says the summit will offer a platform for supporters of Mr. Trump, who say they face censorship by left-tilting big tech companies.
This is really an opportunity for the president to talk to his supporters on social media, to hear from them, and to kind of fire them up. They've invited a lot of conservative, right-of-center individuals and groups to be there in the room, in the East Room of the White House, and the president will be speaking. And we expect a lot of the conversation will relate to alleged bias by some of these social media platforms against conservatives.
Conservative media personalities and think tanks like the Heritage Foundation have been invited to the gathering. The summit's likely targets, tech firms including Facebook, Twitter, and Google parent Alphabet, were not invited. I asked Ryan Tracy how much the summit can accomplish in practical terms.
Well, there's not a lot the president can do specifically, in large part because the social media companies enjoy liability protection under the law right now, and Congress doesn't look likely to change that anytime soon. In theory, there are things the president could do related to antitrust investigations of large tech companies that are kind of in their very early stages. So we could see some action down the road. But from the analysts we spoke with in our story, the sense we have is there's not a lot the president can do tangibly. There's a lot he can say, and there's a lot he can do to fire up his supporters on this issue. And it's an issue that polls well for him. It's something that Americans are worried about, and in terms of lack of regulation or oversight of these social media companies. And so it's one he's going to hammer on at this event Thursday, and one we expect that will come up again and again during the campaign.
The Wall Street Journal's Ryan Tracy. Nintendo says it will start selling a cheaper version of its Switch video game console in September, a move aimed at boosting sales for a system that is now more than 2 years old. The new model, called Nintendo Switch Lite, is smaller than its predecessor and doesn't connect to a TV screen. It'll be priced around $200, about $100 less than the flagship model, and could serve as a replacement to the 3DS, Nintendo's aging handheld device. This comes as Switch sales missed analysts' expectations in Nintendo's most recent fiscal year, though the company said it expected a better performance this year.
The University of Alabama School of Law, online. Choose between an LLM in tax or business transactions for lawyers or a Juris Master in taxation for non-lawyers. Connect and learn with live lectures. Details at bamabydistance.ua.edu.
The streaming TV space is getting ever more crowded and more expensive. Walt Disney, AT&T's Warner Media, and Apple are set to enter the streaming market and pay millions and millions of dollars for shows that will cost as much as a big-budget movie. They're attempting to gain a foothold in a market currently dominated by Netflix, HBO, and Hulu. With more on this, we're joined via Skype by The Wall Street Journal's Eric Schwartzel, who's in Los Angeles. Eric, is it accurate to say that streaming competitors, new or established, are attempting to produce epic TV shows, you know, along the lines of Game of Thrones?
Absolutely, almost to a service. I mean, each of the new players that are entering the market all have a big budget fantasy show that they are launching with or debuting shortly after the service becomes available. And they're doing it for a couple reasons. One is they're trying to capture the cultural conversation that Game of Thrones did now that that show is off the air. The other is they want to signal to consumers, hey, we are a place where you can come for A quality content, right? Like, this is not going to just be some more television shows. This is going to be almost cinematic in its scope, the material that you'll be able to get piped into your home.
How much are streaming producers shelling out for one episode of a new show?
It's quite expensive. It's between $8 million and $15 million per episode. Now, to put that in perspective, that is, even on the lower end, more than it costs to make the movie Get Out, and on the higher end, more than it costs to make the movie A Quiet Place. So studios can make independent films and very successful features for less than it's costing a single episode of television.
Aren't the shows expensive because the Disneys and the Amazons are constructing elaborate sets, filming in exotic locations, and, you know, spending a lot on star talent, which is what TV shows and movies have always done?
Sure, the star talent is certainly a part of it, but I think the other element that you didn't mention is the special effects. Because a lot of these shows, if you see the footage, it's clear that they are really doing what they call world building, you know, trying to create an entirely new setting or landscape. This is not necessarily something that can be easily constructed on a soundstage.
Well, as far as content is concerned, what strategies are streaming companies employing? You know, what are some of the shows that they're producing?
So Apple has a show called C that stars Jason Momoa of Aquaman fame. That is going to be a new show that is based on property that we don't really know too much about. All we know is that it takes place centuries in the future in a world where much of the population has been decimated by a virus and the survivors are blind. But if you look at some of the footage that's come out of that show, it's clear that this is definitely a Game of Thrones-esque setting, right? There are a lot of actors running around fields covered in furs looking ready for battle. But there are also some big budget shows like the Star Wars show at Disney and the Lord of the Rings show at Amazon that are really leaning on established properties, trying to bring in fans who know those characters, know that setting, and will subscribe because they have to see everything that's made concerning it, right? But I think the bigger picture to keep in mind here is that fantasy shows travel in ways that comedies and dramas do not. And by that I mean that they make it easier to sell overseas. They appeal to viewers in all kinds of markets because they take place, you know, on an earth that isn't our own or in a setting that isn't our own. So it really is part of a strategy on the behalf of the streaming services to really go international and make sure that they're picking up consumers there too.
So out of all this content, would you say that the streaming companies that are producing the fantasy shows may have the advantage?
Yes, in some ways, because it's a lot less tangible to measure whether or not these big expenses are worth it, because it's part of this larger pot of production spending. And, you know, a big show that costs $15 million an episode, it might not justify itself in the number of viewers tuning in for those episodes, but it might justify itself in terms of overall branding and convincing subscribers that this is a service that's willing to spend money and give them quality programming.
And we're talking about established media giants. How big are the risks that the companies are taking?
I mean, this is a lot of money, and it's spending a lot of money to stand out in a marketplace that is more crowded than ever. So I think when you look at the lineup of shows, and I stopped counting after I think maybe like 8 or 9 new big budget shows coming on in the next year, you just know that not everything's going to be a hit, right? There are going to be some things that just flat out flop or fall through the cracks and don't really cause the ripple that they should. And then I think that's when investors are going to start asking, okay, this direct-to-consumer strategy that all of the studios are pursuing, are they doing it in the most strategic of ways?
The Wall Street Journal's Eric Schwartzel joining us via Skype from Los Angeles. Thanks, Eric.
Hey, thank you.
And that's Tech News Briefing. I'm Charlie Turner in New York for The Wall Street Journal.